Welcome back to Deep End of Public Education. My name is Kristen Grubbs, and I appreciate your willingness to consider the issues that reside in the deep, dark waters of our public school system. I hope you learn something new today and take that knowledge back with you as you dive into what's going on in your own school district. My goal in this episode is to make sure parents know what their rights are so they can be aware of what to watch for in their school district. I also want to share with you some of the early signs that triggered my initial dive into the deep end of my local school district. Let's hop on in and get swimming in the deep end of public education. In my previous two episodes, I shared with you some of my concerns over the Panorama student surveys that my local school district has utilized for the last 3 years. I explained what happens to the information collected from those surveys and how our district, and countless other districts across the country, is violating parents' rights by sharing student data with a research company without first getting parental consent. When I contacted my local district about where I may have inadvertently given permission for them to share my students' data, district administration guided me to the student handbook. The student handbook provided no clarity regarding parental consent. In a bit, I'll speak to how this raises concerns about transparency in the district. But for now, I'll break down how the student handbook works, at least in my district, so maybe you'll have some insight into how your district might work too. By federal law, school districts are required to notify parents of their rights annually. This can be done by letter, PTA bulletin, student handbook, newspaper article, or however a school district sees fit. In my district, the student handbook is where I was told this annual notice of parents' rights could be found. What I did find is a public notice on page 4 of the 44-page document stating that the school district is to keep records of all students, the district is responsible for safeguarding those records, and parents, by law, are allowed to access those records. The details of what this meant were more obscure. Furthermore, on page 15, the document addresses custodial and non-custodial parent rights and responsibilities. This statement of parental rights is categorized under a headline that would easily be dismissed by families not split by divorce or those who live in separate households. Regardless, the one sentence designated to this declaration of rights gives no actual detail of these rights. On this very same page in the handbook, under the heading Directory Information, and in closed parentheses following that it says Annual Notice of, there's a rather detailed description of parental rights to choose what information is allowed to be included in directories. For those of you not familiar with federal law regarding student privacy and directory information, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act goes into great detail about what is and isn't allowed in directories, so student privacy is not violated. The law also states that parents are required to give permission before any information can be included in a school directory. On page 20, our handbook outlines policies regarding discrimination and the grievance process. Page 23 touches on harassment and how that is investigated. These two issues may give glimpses into rights parents have, but they're not explicitly detailing those rights. It's not until page 29 that I find something that might actually have some meat to it. Page 29 gives an overview of the Protection of People Rights Amendment, or PPRA. It reads, "The Protection of People Rights Amendment affords parents certain rights regarding our conduct of survey, collection, and use of information for marketing purposes, and certain physical exams." I might go into greater detail on this particular law in another episode, but for now, I'm going to read through what my school district student handbook details about PPRA. This is what our handbook reads. This law includes the right to consent before students are required to submit to a survey that concerns one or more of the following protected areas, or a protected information survey. If the survey is funded in whole or in part by a program of the U.S. Department of Education, it then lists the protected areas that cannot be surveyed unless parental consent is given. 1. Political affiliations or beliefs of the student or student's family. 2. Mental or psychological problems of the student or student's family. 3. Sex behavior or attitudes. 4. Illegal, antisocial, self-incriminating, or demeaning behavior. 5. critical appraisals of others with whom respondents have close family relationships. 6. Legally recognized privileged relationships, such as with lawyers, doctors, or ministers. 7. Religious practices, affiliations, or beliefs of the students or parents. Or 8. Income other than is required by law to determine program eligibility. The handbook continues on, saying that parents have the right to receive notice and an opportunity to opt out of 1. Any other protected information survey, regardless of funding. 2. Any non-emergency invasive physical exam or screening required as a condition of attendance administered by the school or its agent, and not necessarily to protect the immediate health and safety of a student, except for hearing, vision, or scoliosis screenings, or any physical exam or screenings permitted or required under state law. And 3. Activities involving collection, disclosure, or use of personal information obtained from students for marketing or to sell or otherwise distribute the information to others. Reading on, parents also have the right to inspect upon request and before administration or use, 1. Protected information surveys of students. 2. Instruments used to collect personal information from students for any of the above marketing, sales, or other distribution purposes. And 3. Instructional material used as part of the educational curriculum. And then the handbook addresses that the rights transfer from the parents to a student who is 18 years old or an emancipated minor under state law. Parents who believe their rights have been violated may file a complaint with the Family Policy Compliance Office of the U.S. Department of Education, and then it gives contact information. The handbook has not yet been updated to reflect that the Family Policy Compliance Office has changed names and is now called the Student Privacy Policy Office. This particular section regarding the Protection of People Rights Amendment references a board policy, JHDA, which I had to search for on the school website. To give you a better idea of how transparent my school district is, let me explain where this policy can be found. Our district's website was just updated earlier this spring, and it's been said that it's much easier to navigate. If I go to the school district's website and enter in the search box, Policy JHDA, I get 21 pages of results with 10 links per page. To narrow it down, I do a search for JHDA. I get 0 results. To find our district's policies, I must click on the District menu, then Board of Education, then Board Agendas, Policies, and Minutes. This opens up a new tab with an online database called Board Docs. This is a system that your school district may very well use. Another district I looked into when I was contacted for help also uses Board Docs, but only for board meeting agendas. All other policies and such were not available in this system. My local school district uses it for all board meeting agendas, minutes, policies, and public documents. In one way, this is a great advantage I have in my district, but just because they use it doesn't mean that district intentions and practices are transparent. In my district, Board Policy JHDA covers surveying, analyzing, or evaluating students. It gives the information from PPRA that I previously mentioned. Then it has a section titled Notification of Policy and Privacy. In this section, the policy reads, "The district will take measures to protect the identification and privacy of the students participating in a protected information survey, regardless of the source of funding. These measures may include limiting access to the completed surveys and the survey results as allowed by law. All student educational records will be protected in accordance with law and Board Policy JO. If I swing on over to Policy JO and Board Docs, I can see that it covers student records. This policy has referenced other areas in the student handbook, so I'll read you the first paragraph under this policy to give you an idea of what it's about. It reads, "In order to provide students with appropriate instruction and educational services, it is necessary for the district to maintain extensive and sometimes personal information about students and families. These records must be kept confidential in accordance with law, but must also be readily available to district personnel who need the records to effectively serve district students." This policy is also referenced in the student handbook on page 31 under the heading Student Records. A subheading in the section finally addresses the annual notice of rights to parents and students. I will note here that there's an index of topics on the last page of the student handbook, but nowhere in the index is there a reference to parents' rights or annual notice or simply right for that matter. It's all under the heading of student records on page 32. This annual notice section gives an overview of release of education records, records retention, and appeals procedures. The leading paragraph reads, "The district shall annually notify parents of students currently in attendance or eligible students in attendance of their rights under the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA, and of FERPA regulation by publication of the student handbook or by distributing notification to the parents or eligible parents at the beginning of the school year. Parents and/or students may request that the district not use a student's social security number at the time of enrollment." Okay, awesome. So the district can check off the box that requires an annual notice to parents. Great. But I still hadn't seen where the district may have stated that it was going to share my students' information with an outside agency for the purpose of research without my consent. Under the subheading Release of Education Records, the handbook reads, "Disclosure of information from a student's education records will be made only with the written consent of the parent or eligible student, subject to the following exceptions." The only exception that might possibly apply to companies like Panorama getting students' personally identifiable information, or PII, is the first bullet point, which reads, "To school officials who have a legitimate educational interest in the records." If you'd like to understand more about what that phrase means, you can go back and listen to episode 1 or even episode 2, in which I address how the school district has used the vague language of this law to their advantage, usurping parental authority over student records. To put it very simply, though, a school district can decide to contract a task to an outside agency if the district sees that task as supporting an expressed goal of the district, and that outside agency then becomes an extension of the district to complete that task that the district would probably use its employees for otherwise. I know that's a mouthful, but that's the gist of what that line means. What the district sees as helpful toward their goals, they can deem a legitimate educational interest and hire whatever agency or organization they want. Boom! Parents' rights be damned. This, my dear listeners, is the status of parental rights in our country. This is where our laws fail us as parents. This is one way districts are stepping in and granting themselves authority in place of parents. This is why I titled this episode Trans Parent. School districts all over the country are progressively identifying as supreme authorities in students' lives, trying to make decisions about student records, curriculum, and even health choices in place of actual parents. By enrolling our students in public education, we did not hand over parental authority to the district. We did not give teachers, administrators, and even board members permission to raise our kids. Whether we birthed them or not, we are the responsible party for raising our children, and we've got to assert and protect that truth to any and all threats. I hope this encourages you in some way to dig into your local district's records to see where your parental rights are being declared, what they entail, and what recourse you may have in fighting this unethical shift of parental authority. Let's continue swimming as I share about a string of events that occurred in December of last year and experienced just weeks after the November board meeting that led to my splash into the deep end of public education. Just before 10 a.m. on a Thursday last December, I got a text from my freshman daughter saying there had apparently been 5 fights at school already that day. Rumors were flying as to what brought about these fights, as well as how they were handled. She had not seen any fights herself, but she'd seen videos on other students' phones that confirmed at least 3 different fights. At 11:14 a.m., I received another text saying she had heard school resource officer had been stabbed. In case you're not familiar, a school resource officer is a police officer assigned to the school for security purposes. By 11:22 a.m., she was ready to come home because she felt so uneasy over the situation. The atmosphere at school just felt different. I immediately left her house and picked her up at 11:35 a.m. When I went to the attendance window to check her out, I told the woman that I was there to pick my daughter up. She didn't ask why or if I had even given notice that I'd be picking her up. Normally they'd ask if she has an appointment or what the reason was for leaving early. No one asked me that day. By my daughter's accounts, other students had left early too. My daughter's next hour was lunch, and a friend she normally sits with at lunch heard another fight in the hallway near the cafeteria. By this account, extra officers were on the scene in minutes. I'll note here that this high school is practically next door to the police station. That evening, I watched three videos of fights from that day that my daughter's friends sent her. All were in different areas of the school, and each fight involved several students. One video shows the resource officer and teachers attempting to break up the fight. Another showed teachers and administrators attempting the same. That same evening was the monthly school board meeting, and naturally, the violence from that day was never addressed. It wasn't until late that evening that the principal emailed parents saying there had been extra police presence on campus that day to investigate a rumor that had gone around about a student threatening to bring a weapon to school that day. The email stated that no weapons were found. The only sentence in the entire letter that said anything about the fights read like this: "Additional police officers were on campus today to help with our investigation and also helped us address physical altercations between students that your child may be aware of." That was it. It focused more on the rumor of a weapon at school than it did of the chaos that the fights caused. Of the videos that I saw, only one officer was visible, and it was the resource officer that's usually on duty. This raised questions as to why the multiple fights that day were being so easily dismissed, and it provided no clarity as to whether there were injuries or arrests. My daughter and some of her friends were shaken by the chaos, and the email from the principal only raised questions regarding transparency. Late that same evening, the executive director of public relations for the district sent out a separate email discussing the threat posed by the TikTok challenge of violence at school that Friday. Conveniently, internet searches the next day mentioned nothing about the fights the day before. There was no evidence in the media. My family has been in this town for over 39 years. It is not normal for rashes of fights to break out in one school without the media picking up on it. This seemed odd to me. Friday evening, the local paper finally had a statement posted from the police department. The statement reported that there had been three fights on campus over the last few days, and that they were, quote, managed by school personnel with the assistance of the assigned school resource officer, end quote. It reported that the resource officer did receive some minor injuries, but that he required no medical treatment and continued throughout his normal workday. No other injuries were reported. It also said the officer, quote, assisted with investigating a rumor of a weapon on school grounds after the handling of the above-mentioned altercations, end quote, and that the, quote, department elected to support the school with additional police coverage throughout the remainder of the day in an effort to alleviate any concerns held by both students and parents, end quote. The TikTok challenge provided a convenient cover for the unexplained events from that Thursday. My daughter and several other students we know stayed home from school that Friday as the events from the day before left them feeling unsafe and scared. So many questions still remain as the events from that day have been swept under the rug. There's an understanding that spread throughout the school population about what caused it all. The weekend prior to these fights, a student from my daughter's high school had been shot and killed in a neighboring city while visiting friends. It was reported to be an accidental shooting. In response to that event, a fellow student supposedly made a snappy comment on social media about the deceased student's life not mattering. Within days of that post, our high school was lit up with violence. Strangely, the police blotter from the week of the fights lists an assault at the high school on that Tuesday, two that Wednesday, and strange enough, zero that Thursday. I don't know about you, but this is confusing. The police statement said there'd been three fights over the last few days, but it also stated there were fights at the school that day. The officer, although minor, had gotten injured. How is there no report in the police blotter for what happened that Thursday? This all may seem like a big misunderstanding, but it's a great example of the lack of transparency in my local school district. It also raises questions as to why there are discrepancies between the principal's description of what happened that day, the police department's statement, and the police blotter, let alone actual witness accounts of what occurred. If the district had been more transparent and just laid it out in the email that there had been several fights that day, that teachers, administrators, and the resource officer handled them accordingly, if they'd answered people's questions as best as they could without compromising privacy laws, things could have been different. Parents could have felt like the situation was under control. But when students are leaving school early because of the chaos, when fights are occurring all over the school throughout the day and not even a soft lockdown occurs, when the district refuses to say whether anyone was arrested because they claim even that fact would compromise the privacy of juveniles, parents are left with no answers, no explanation, and less trust in the school district. I share this story to not only give you more background as to what led to my dive into the deep end, but also to lay a basis for future episodes where we'll discuss transparency and trust in our educational institutions. There's so much more to say about these issues, but I'll have to leave that for another day. I hope this episode leaves you a little more informed about what your rights are as a parent, and I hope I've given you at least a few clues as to what to look for in your district. I really wish the pool of our public school system wasn't so murky or deep, but evidence continues to prove otherwise. Thank you for joining me today. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode with others so they, too, can be informed about their rights as parents. Please be aware of what's going on in your school district, and come back next time as we jump back in to the deep end of public education.